Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is happening? My name is Curtis, and I've got a huge show today. We've got so much to cover, but first I've got to introduce my magnificent co-host. First of all, back from a long delay, Dustin. Dustin, how are you, sir?
I am actually awake, doing my thing.
Not tired. I wouldn't say long delay. You just haven't been on the show in a couple weeks, right?
Well, there's been gaps, yes.
It's like you've been traveling internationally or something. Jeez.
Right. And domestically.
Also on the line is Cameron, our producer. Cameron, what's up, man?
Oh, not a lot, man. How are you?
Dude, I'm pumped. We've got so much to talk about. I feel, you know, a rant coming on, but that's going to happen probably in the second segment. But Dustin, I want to start with you here. You just got back from not only Japan, but GP Minneapolis. So you got your cards from Japan and you promptly drove them to Minnesota.
Indeed.
How was the GP?
All right. So first things first, we were going to the GP on the morning of, and we took a friend's car, right? And apparently there's something wrong with the back window, right? And I'm sitting in the back, right? So I roll the window down. Next thing I know is I'm not supposed to be rolling the window down. It's not going to roll back up, right? So we park. He's there to play. So I tell him, I said, I'll mess with the window. You need to go in, blah, blah, blah. We get there at like 9:20-ish, right?
Okay.
And we're all thinking that everything starts at 10, right? And he's like all pissed and this and that. And it's understandable, right? He's got a twin turbo BMW, right? This window's not working right. You don't want to leave it parked in a parking garage with the window down. He says, just leave it. I'm like, no, I'm not leaving it. You know, it's my fault. I'm not going to have your car like get jacked or broken into, right? So I keep telling him to go in. He won't do it. He finally goes in at like 9:50. And I'm like just messing with this window over and over and over. He shows back up and I find out that he's even more pissed because they decided to start early on this constructed event, right? And it's like the first time on a constructed event they start at 9, right? So since he missed everything, by 9:30, he wasn't sitting in a seat, so he got a match loss, right? That's always great. That, but I sit there messing with this window for like 3 hours, right? But I actually get the window to go up, right? So 3 hours after, I can finally go in and get some trades done, right?
So just to clarify, before you ever traded a card,
yes,
you worked on a back window
of
a BMW for 3 hours in a parking garage in Minneapolis.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So just as a weekend, it wasn't very successful then?
Okay. So if you've ever seen me trade, which you have, typically when I get my cards in trade, I throw them in a deck box. I don't put them straight into my binders, right? This way I can sort them and everything and have things ready for the next GP. Typically after day one, I have about between like 9 and 12 deck boxes full of cards to trade it into, right?
Right.
So over the entire weekend, I did not fill up a single deck box.
Ooh.
Yes.
Ugh. Dude, you beat that at like PTQs and Star City Games Invitational Qualifiers
and stuff. I know. I can have a room of like 50 people and do better than that, right? It was rough. But to you know, survive the weekend... I did hit up a couple dealer booths, which I rarely do, right? Mm-hmm. And I unloaded some MPS lands. I had a whole bunch of the old guild lands and stuff like that. The lands that had the big MPS on them for the second year and stuff like that, too. So I ended up coming out with, it was something like 1,500 cash. So that's
not
bad.
But
so
it's 1,500 still not,
cash and less than a deck box of trade. So I salvaged the weekend, right?
Right.
But it was still rough.
So this is the point where I ask you about the cards that you were looking for me, but then I'm not going to get the answers I want, huh?
Right.
Well, it sounds like you had a great time in Minneapolis, or not really, I suppose. So, Dustin, you, for the first time, had not gone with me to this event called Spectrum. I kind of have to lay this out, because not a lot of people know what the Spectrum Fantastic Art Live Festival is, but it's something that we have in Kansas City that a lot of fantasy artists come to. Upwards of 15, sometimes it's usually between 15 and 30 Magic the Gathering artists.
I could have swore it's more than that. I'm thinking more like closer to 40 to 50.
Well, this year it was 15 to 30.
Wow, we'll so they're that. Dropping off.
Yeah, and it's kind of one of these weird things. Because it's just a fantasy art festival, there's no real magic event, right? Mm-hmm. And there's also no real reason to be there unless you're an art student or you really like art from these guys. And the magic artists that are there tend to be kind of on the younger end of the spectrum. And I know we're the Spike Feed and we, you know, tend to focus on competitive play, but I am a bit of an artwork hound when it comes to magic. So I just want to talk about this a little bit. So the big ones that were there in terms of number of cards were Steve Argyle, mm-hmm. Eric Deschamps, Mark Poole, and the guy that did Remand, and your buddy Vance Kovacs, yeah. Of course, Dustin. More on Vance Kovacs later. And then some new ones like Cynthia Shepherd and Noah Bradley, who I think were the most notable new additions. You know, I got to talk to each of these people and talk to them about their art and all that kind of stuff. You know, every year I go, I always make it a point to go mm-hmm. to Steve Argyle's booth. That guy is a true professional, sells awesome prints, does great alters. And he's probably the artist that I like to talk to the most, him and RK Post, which is somebody that Dustin's talked to, gosh, I don't know how many times now. But anyway, so Cynthia Shepherd and Noah Bradley are kind of newer. Noah Bradley's done some of the Scrylands, and Cynthia Shepherd did Young Pyromancer.
Nice.
And, you know, it's interesting talking to these artists because when you see them at a Grand Prix, you are in this, like, huge mm-hmm. line to get your cards signed, and you're there forever, right? Whenever you're at this event, where half the people there don't even play Magic at all, you just walk right up to the artist, right? And then you kind of get into this awkward thing of, like, okay, I want you to sign my cards, but I'm also kind of expected to buy something now.
Yeah, I don't have this problem.
I know Dustin doesn't feel this way. He never feels obligated to do anything, right? And so, you know, you kind of get into this weird exchange where there's not a forced, like, end of the conversation mm-hmm. the way there is when there's a line of people, right?
Sure.
But I was talking to Cynthia Shepherd about, you know, kind of the difference, and she was saying, yeah, after a Grand Prix, I decided to fill up my bathtub in cash. Just to do it once.
Now, are we talking like coins or paper money? Because paper money is easier because it's like fluffy.
Paper money. I think she said cash. So I took that as paper money, but she also said it was like super exhausting. Whereas this is a lot more kind of chill and those types of things. So the artist that I hit up, our boy Dan Scott, who's mm-hmm. a local to us and we've seen a million times. You know, I hit up Steve Argyle and got a Swamp Thing altar on a Deathrite Shaman, which was super sweet.
That's awesome.
And then the big get for me was Drew Baker was there who did the foil promo, Caracas, the judge promo. I got that altered. I posted that picture on Twitter. I was very happy. I went up to him and was like, hey, do you do alters? You know, he's like, yeah, I don't have any Sharpies. Do you care if I just paint on the card? And I was like, I don't mind at all. Right? So, you know, that was all cool. I also had a really interesting talk with Dan Scott about Hearthstone, which has kind of been a topic that has gone, you know, on and off again on this show, and I don't want to hit it too heavily, but some of Dan Scott's work is also in Hearthstone. And he's been playing it a lot, and just he talked to me about the differences between the game, and he actually was very, you know, stood up for Magic Online, which I think we'll get into later. He's like, you know, they just have so much baggage they've brought from years and years of the game that it's very hard to work in, but they're doing the best they can. You know? Okay. But that being said, Hearthstone still smokes it. I didn't have the heart to tell him, right? Yeah. What are you going to do? Anyway, so if you're ever in town or looking to get some cards altered, go to Spectrum. It's in Kansas City. It's always in May. It's a great event. But that being said, I haven't played competitive Magic in like 3 weeks, and I might be playing States this weekend. So I'm a little bit, you know, overwhelmed with, you know, the potential to really suck at this upcoming tournament. So Cameron... You're our local standard expert. How has Standard been treating you, buddy?
Well, not too bad. I, on a whim, decided to kind of suit up a new deck in Standard, and I did I would call it a blue-white heroic deck.
That sounds horrible.
It was so it cost me $15 to suit up, which I was not displeased with. And so
tell me you paid in all ones and threw it at the cashier.
I should have done that, yeah. So I played four Battlefield Thaumaturges. So each instant or sorcery spell you cast one less to cast for each creature it targets. So launch the fleet, Curse of the Swine, both you know, you pay one or you pay two blue and you can target all of your creatures. And like I said, it was just a lot of just uncommons, and I was just wanting to play something completely different. I did actually reasonably well, and I think it was just because nobody prepared to play a deck mm-hmm. like that, play against a deck like that. And I went 3-2 with this deck, and it was great. I mean, like, we're talking, it's pretty much all cards except for the Hallowed Fountains from this block, which was really kind of cool.
So now that you've bought this $15 deck, you're spending the rest of your money on Legacy again, right? Or not? Or are you? Or not?
I am. Yeah. Yeah. So we'll talk about that later.
I don't believe it. I don't believe it.
So,
I
Dustin,
really
if you're keeping score at home, how many times has Cameron been back in on Legacy?
I think it's been 4.
It's like a bad girlfriend.
Right, and he's going to go back to it, and he's going to go buy her flowers like twice, and he's going to be all mad, and then he's going to say it's too expensive.
You know, Cameron, I honestly thought of you because Scapeshift won this last GP, and I thought, Cameron's going to go buy Scapeshift now.
I actually watched that entire match, and it was really good, but, I mean, Scapeshift versus Jund, and I wanted to talk to you about that, of just, like, Modern, and... You know, they banned Deathrite Shaman, but, like, it just seems like Pod is so much more of a an issue. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Dude, I watched that tournament. I watched probably 6 or 7 of the matches. I don't know how many of them were Birthing Pod.
Right.
Right?
And even though the Birthing Pod setup, or the Birthing Pod deck was not featured in the finals, it was all over that tournament before. Now, a large part of that was some of the players that were playing it. But I came to the conclusion that one of my big problems with Modern is how many of the decks are just creature combo decks. And most of the time, you know, one of two creature combos. It's the Splinter Twin, whatever, Kiki Jiki combo, or some sort of Birthing Pod combo. And all the other decks have been so neutered that those are by far the best strategies. Right, and the only reason that Scapeshift won, sorry to say this, is because it's amazing against Birthing Pod. Yeah. It's actually not that great against a ton of decks. Mm-hmm.
It's really bad against Merfolk. Really bad against Merfolk.
Yeah, and let me just kind of dispel this, because there are so many people. Oh, Modern has so much variety. It's amazing. And if you look at the daily deck breakdown, like 40% of the decks for day one were quote other. Right? Guess how many of those, quote, other decks were in the top 8, were in the top 16? Right? Zero.
Yeah, zero, yeah.
It's all the same 3 or 4 decks, which is completely not okay for this card pool, which is monstrously huge. Right? Mm-hmm. And if you have the same Legacy tournament, you know, with the same pool of decks over and over again, you're going to get top 8s that are wildly diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's how the meta works. But we have seen Birthing Pod, Jund, Splinter Twin, Birthing Pod, Jund, Affinity. It's like, I tell you what, Cameron, I'm saving my rant for later on, okay?
Okay.
You're trying to wear me out, right? To get me to rant before my big rant, and it's not going to happen.
Sure.
Okay.
No. We're just doing like a montage up to it. That's what we're doing.
Right. I'm actually going to jump rope during the break. So we'll come back. All right, guys. So we have a bunch of big news items. Obviously, there was the second major standard tournament of the season. We're not going to really spend any time on, though there were some interesting results. We kind of want to spend some time on these other major announcements, starting with Vintage Masters. So Vintage Masters, the cards have started to be spoiled, and it's a Magic Online only set. They've spoiled the Power 9 and some of the dual lands and some of the cards from Conspiracy that we know are floating around out there. And this is a draftable set that's coming out soon. And like Modern Masters, the packs are more expensive than a normal pack. Though it, you know, and the Power 9 are also hyper rare or more rare than a mythic rare. Okay. So kind of tying in with this is that Magic Online this last week forced its users to use the beta for the new system. You were not allowed to log on using the old version. So for many people, that means, hey, I'm taking a week off of Magic Online. So Cameron, you have mentioned that this makes you very unhappy. When you originally kind of got into competitive Magic, you signed up for a Magic Online account like right away, right?
Yeah.
Now, where's your usage at with the program right now?
Practically zero. I mean, I log in every once in a while, but I mean, what it comes down to is I want to invest in card. I mean, I know it might be a little cheaper to do it on Magic Online, but I want to invest my money into something, and that's into Paper Magic. That's where I go every Friday night or Saturday afternoon. So that's where all my resources are going for Magic.
Okay. And so when I mentioned Vintage Masters, it's kind of the word of the day, pissed. You said you were pissed. What about it upsets you?
It's that there are these beautiful dual lands just sitting here with the chance of you being able to open up a pack with one of these. And that we live in this world where Paper Magic theoretically is never going to see those dual lands. And the fact that they can do this on Magic Online because of whatever ruling said that they could do this is just upsetting.
Yeah, so by the way, just to clarify my earlier statements, it's $7 a pack for a 15 card booster, okay? And there's 10 commons, 3 uncommons, 1 rare and mythic, and then 1 premium foil card. Any rarity including the extremely rare premium foil power 9 card or 1 power 9. Okay?
All right.
So the Power 9 can exist in the spot that the foil existed in Modern Masters, okay? It can't actually take up the rare spot the way it's worded here. I don't even know how to, like, logically sequence my thoughts on this besides to say they're losing so much money by putting it out this way, okay? This is obscenely overpriced for what it is. And I'm sorry, you still haven't... This combined with the horrible beta doesn't bring anyone in. Doesn't add accessibility to your product. You know, this beta has been so bad, this should be a product that is half price from a normal pack. Right? That's what you call marketing, guys. You should check it out. Maybe take a class at your local community college. Overcharging me for crappy crap is terrible. I'm trying so hard not to curse right now because I'm just so irritated. Dustin, say something. I'm just too mad.
I don't know. I think the spoiler itself is really bad. It's like they spoil all the cards you expect would be in there, dual lands and Power 9, and then, by the way, also Brago and Deck Faden, right? It's like, oh, we're so hyped about Deck Faden being in this, right? I don't know. It's
more
different.
Importantly, will I be able to hack my client to change it to Dash Rendar?
Right.
I mean, you know, and I want to give a shout out to Marcel because he's been very active on about this on Twitter regarding kind of the situation with Magic Online. And I think it just boils down to this. Play something else. If you're unhappy with the economy and the way that they're shooting out to you, the way to get Hasbro's attention is to not play the game, guys. To not spend money, to not log in, right? Yeah. And we're to a point now where there are alternatives. There are. There's Hearthstone, there's Soulforge, there's Ascension, there's your LGS. Go out, go play there.
Yep. Right?
But I don't
Do we have anything
to.
Else to say
I
about
don't
this?
I don't want to. I want to play Magic. I want to play these cards. Why isn't Wizards, why isn't Hasbro printing these cards? Sell them like $50 a pack, like for, like, you know, the dual lands. They're making the money. Nobody else is making the money. I don't understand why they don't want to have control.
And the digital thing, it's like even more numbing because these things are going to be so outrageously priced. And how does that open the doors for Vintage Online? You're just saying, hey guys, this super niche product, and stop, like, I've heard this argument that people are saying, oh, well, it's like a BMW. Guess what, guys? A BMW starts and drives down the freaking road, okay? Not your product. Well, okay, the back window might be a little messed up, but that's another story.
But it still gets you where you want to be, right?
That's Dustin's fault.
Right.
It's true. You're going to make it to Minneapolis.
Stop acting like it's a luxury item. It's not a Rolex. Right?
Something else.
Okay. So let's continue down this negative path because we just can't get enough. New Judge promos. Okay. So they said, hey, we've got some new Judge promos coming out, and some of them are fantastic.
I like the Phyrexian Elish Norn.
That card is sweet.
I think it's way overpriced right now, and I think it'll drop in price. I think it'll settle in around 120 once the smoke clears, but it's cool.
Yeah, and Elish Norn is like a cube in EDH mm-hmm. staple. You know, she's a great card, and that's what I think the Judge promo should be. Look, I think judges should be rewarded for what they do. They are awesome and essential to the success of competitive Magic, and they should be financially rewarded a lot more than they are. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very much of that belief. So don't take this as Magic judges shouldn't get their dues, because they absolutely should. And I think the Elish Norn is a great example of the kind of card you can print that doesn't hurt accessibility and gives them something to cool to either hold on to or sell and kind of earn something back. There's some other cool ones, too. There's Old Border Sword of Feast and Famine, which mm-hmm. is sick.
It is cool.
Sick. Which, you know, we've already talked about my thoughts on the old artifact border. I'm just a sucker for it. I'm just a sucker for it. So Cameron's a guy that's buying into or attempting to buy into Legacy. And just the other week, Cameron, we said, okay, here's your roadmap for cards you're going to get. The first card on your list was what?
Force of Will.
And so, oh, sweet. Judge promo. There should be more out there. This should be more affordable for you, right?
Absolutely, right? Yeah, it's like, I might be able to buy into this at under $100. It'd be great.
So, forget you, Cameron. You don't get to play Legacy. May God have mercy on your soul.
No, okay, this is the thing that gets me with these Judge promos. If you look the article, right? The article specifically says that they sent these out to judges that had taught other judges, right? Now, also, if you look in the photos of it and everything, the Force of Will is number 4 of 9 of the Judge promos, right? Now, it doesn't say that it's exclusive to the judges that taught other judges. To me, that sounds like it's just a bonus, right? And it being number 4 of 9, like smack in the middle, wouldn't they still end up in the judge packets? I mean, it makes sense that it would. But everybody's running around like it won't.
It might, dude. It might. And maybe they just kind of staggered the release of it. We've been waiting on this card to get reprinted this long. And the way you do it is release it in such a way, which, by the way, the original mm-hmm. card is an uncommon, guys. It's an uncommon. And people need your game.
Slow down here. Yeah. Okay? You complain about it like you can't find it. Force of Wills are really easy to find. Yes, they're expensive, but they're still really easy to find. It's not like you're saying you have to have a Black Lotus to play this game, right? Black Lotuses are much harder to find, and yes, they're more expensive, but you see a lot less of them in the wild. When I go trading in a weekend, I can find at least 30 Force of Wills floating around. It's not like they're just missing.
Okay, I guess my point is this. The cost is prohibitive. It's not the rarity, right? This isn't like the Black Lotus on Magic Online, which is another issue. I feel Legacy dying. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And when you do stuff like this, first of all, I don't know how you get upset when people counterfeit your cards when you make them this rare and this ridiculous. And B, it makes me upset for my favorite format when I see somebody like Cameron go out mm-hmm. and try and get it. And this is just like, we'll release that card for $1,000. Mm-hmm. You know? Where every other game on the planet is trying their hardest to snare you in and let you play for as long as possible, right? And I get that that's kind of the appeal of Magic, but it hurts my soul. Cameron, going to drop $1,000 on eBay right now to get these things?
My only hope is that with this new artwork, maybe they'll get reprinted, maybe, in some, you know, like a non-foil.
I wouldn't hold my breath.
That new artwork, I would love that, please. You did it with Thoughtseize. Yeah, probably not.
I just think it's straight up not going to happen. It's not going to be in conspiracy. It's not going to be in a modern legal set. I think this signifies the end of the discussion of Force of Will being reprinted.
It's understandable.
Okay. Guys, I'm just really stressed about magic right now. I think we should come back and just have Cameron become a spike. I'll feel better. So every week we like to give Cameron an older format card and have him read and evaluate it and then judge him with a smug look on our face. So Cameron, what's your card this week?
This week we have Time Twister. It is a sorcery. It costs 2 and a blue, and it reads, each player shuffles his or her hand and graveyard into his or her library, then draws 7 cards, then puts Time Twister into its owner's
graveyard. How come you didn't read the original text? I mean, come on, man.
Oh, I'm sorry. Set Time Twister aside in a new graveyard pile. Shuffle your hand, library, and graveyard together into a new library and draw a new hand of 7 cards, leaving all cards in play where they are. Opponents must do the same. So, I was just looking at the Vintage Masters release of what came out, and there were a couple of cards which I've never seen in the wild, but are super interesting, and I think they're what you call the Power 9, right? So you have, like, Black Lotus and any of the Mox crystal artifacts that add one color to your to your hand, right?
Right.
So with Time Twister, on your turn, if let's say you're playing the first time, you could lay down a land and lay down that Mox Opal and play Time Twister, shuffle everything out, and then have 7 fresh cards to play with, which sounds like it's a huge card advantage over other people or over your opponent.
That's an interesting. It's not wrong.
Okay,
that's not the principal usage. As always, Dustin, let's first hand it off to you. What could I get a Time Twister for? It's the cheapest of the Power 9 in real life, right?
If you were to look for like a beat up Time Twister Unlimited or something, you could find a playable one for under 400.
Okay, that's not bad. Yeah. That's not bad at all.
It's so not too bad.
The reason that it is banned in Legacy, even though it doesn't see really that much Vintage play any longer, is combos. Specifically things like Storm, and more specifically something like High Tide, where you're looking to generate a bunch of spells in one turn. And shut out your opponent from whatever it is that they're doing. And so, obviously, Storm would be the most useful application of this kind of thing. Though you could make the argument, and I think a lot of Vintage players would now, that things like Time Twister and Memory Jar, which is a similar effect, aren't nearly as good as they used to be, and most of those decks play just straight up Ad Nauseam, which is a card that's, you know, modern legal. You've seen it before. And a crazy card advantage engine. That being said, you know, Time Twister in the old days was not necessarily a combo engine. It was more, you know, just for the kitchen table, what you were saying, Cameron, you would try to generate a little bit more advantage and then Time Twister, right?
Okay, okay.
I always liked this back in the day when you had Underworld Dreams on the table, you know?
Dustin so likes fun. Anything with Underworld Dreams. Like, he would try and kill you with Underworld Dream combo decks. You know.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah, but you would play, I mean, these are the days where you would play these big, splashy, powerful spells, and sometimes just eke out little advantage because you were just playing with super powerful spells, like Balance and Armageddon and, you know, and this were just things that were floating around. Yeah, so Time Twister, super sweet deck. So, this weekend, hopefully I am, but I know you are, Cameron, playing States. What are you going to bring? Are you going to bring your blue-white whatever?
No, actually, I'm going to try probably a red-white aggro type of deck. Seems to be doing pretty well. I'm net decking. I have all the cards. We'll go with it. Not a lot new in it, but it gets the job done.
So if you win Iowa State Champs, what is the song that Dustin is singing on the air?
What?
Oh, gosh. Maybe Friday.
Friday. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I like
that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so if I win states, Dustin, what is Cameron singing on the air?
Man. And it can't be explicit?
Well, he can beep it. He's the producer. It's fine.
That's true. Yeah.
You know that song? I can totally not remember the name of the song, but the one about the guy that wants to be a baller a little bit taller, you know, which had a rabbit in a hat and a bat. Yes. It's hilarious, right? Everybody like at home is knowing the song and like yelling at their speakers right now. But yeah, that song. We'll get it for you.
Sure.
Anyway, so Cameron, someone wants to get a hold of you on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
@Cameron_McCoy.
Dustin, where are you keeping your dating profiles at these days for the listeners?
Well, I signed up for a Christian Mingle account, and then the computer caught on fire, so it's just not going to work.
dang it. Anyway, if you want to get a hold of me, I am @CurtisNow. You can listen to our show on brainstormbrewery.com, on mtgcast.com, and our own site, spikefeed.com. We'll check you guys next week.
I think Curtis gave you praise about the editing and how everything just like is all smooth, and all of a sudden everything just has to jam up. And
I jinxed you.
All right, let's do this.